and board members. I'm going to give you some updates on my EO report and then some interesting things are going on statewide and some new information. And then Lori's going to join me a little bit. This is the time for a quarterly violations report. So you hear about that. There are two addendums in your packet, one to correct the minor error in the matrix on violations report, and the second is the inclusion of the summary report of our violations. I think Lori will focus her discussion on. I want to thank two people who are not here, Todd from the U.S. Forest Service and Scott Ferguson, who helped us go to a tour yesterday where we visited the Round area fire and to see the recovery efforts there from that unfortunate fire that took, destroyed roughly 40 homes. Let me start with your EO written report. Your first item, which is now becoming our annual report, is on the South Shore fuels reduction. The good news I want to report to you is we're one-third of the way through a 10,000-acre project to go around the lake to do fuels reduction. As a reminder, this came after the Angora fire, where federal funds were put to this effort. So it is also where we're using your new timberwood that the board recently adopted. We've been working with the Lake Tahoe Forest Service to work out these issues earlier. So this is now the third year of this. We're meeting over the winter times to get things worked out in terms of what project, what needs to be done. And we adopted the permit in April. So each year we're trying to get earlier out the door. And so this is kind of the concept, as you've heard, is working with LAVWP and potential general and our other sister agencies, is that we want to try to work through these projects that they want to work on ahead of time so that when the construction season starts, they can move quickly and take care of the project. So this is, I think, a success story on the LTVMU. There's bad news with this also. We are going to be facing one of our worst fire seasons we've ever seen in our state. I attended a gathering with the fire chiefs in Tahoe about emergency preparedness, particularly in the Tahoe area. We have such interspersed forests with urban housing and evacuation concerns and other, very real concerns about public safety in those areas. And we had a great presentation from the fire chiefs, but what I didn't realize is that the 20 largest fires in the history of this state, 16 were tied to a drought. So they saw a huge uptick in terms of what they need is massive fires related to the drought. So all of them are preparing for probably the worst season ever. There's the Round fire you saw. It was one of the earliest ones in our season. We've had multiple fires already, so we just need to get prepared as a region to try to respond to this. I think we're going to sadly be busy this summer and fall with the fire season. The emergency waiver that the board recently adopted will be very helpful to those communities if they unfortunately have these fires and commercial and homes are destroyed. At least we'll have a path to help the communities remove their debris in a safe manner. So thanks to the board for adopting that waiver. The next thing I want to update you on is the Bridgeport Ranchers, which is again in your packet, date stamps 1310, item number 2. And as a follow-up to the great presentation you just had, a question came, I think, for you, Amy, about the BMP, to know what works and what doesn't work. And to that end, Bridgeport area is one of the more complicated areas because of how the structure of the irrigation ditches and the rivers are in that area. We're now in year 3 of a 5-year waiver for the Bridgeport Ranchers, and I've made a commitment to meet with them in the fall to kind of take a look at the BMPs. What works, what doesn't work? Are there better ways for it to structure this? So I think we're going to have a roll up the sleeves meeting in the fall with the ranchers and see if there's more efficient ways for us to deal with the problems for both of them. They're expressing some concerns about costs in areas of being people that they feel aren't yielding the results. So we're going to have that dialogue in the fall. This was at our request to meet in the fall. Also, in July, look on your next agenda for the Alpine Watershed Group presentation, where we've given some rivers and ranch funds to the Ace Burford Ranch. You can hear about some innovative things we're doing at that particular ranch at at the July board meeting. So just kind of give you a little, a trailer, if it's a movie trailer, a four-bean trailer, but that's coming to hear about. Regarding GRAP, or the Grazing Regulatory Action Project, that's before the state board, we have, as you've heard before, completed all the listening and sessions and workshops, so now the board is deciding how to give staff direction. And I think we're quite close to the final direction. What that will look like, most likely, will be that a resolution will come before the state board to probably end GRAP as a statewide effort. As you know, the state does multiple statewide policies, recycled water policy, compost rule, things like that. Peace out. I think the inkling of the board is going to be likely to not do it statewide and return it back to the regional boards to let them work on it. They'll probably give us some guidance on priorities, which is kind of how regions do it anyways, you know, in terms of focusing on areas where we do have problems as opposed to areas where we do not have problems. And so they're also likely going to encourage us to use BMPs, which is one of the things we use BMPs. And there's interest by the University of California to kind of the effort to revisit a 1990 document that they did for the ranchers that was very successful. Unfortunately, took up money right now, where they did BMPs, they did training and outreach to the ranchers, but sadly, the money ran out, they didn't continue with the education. It was very helpful, and I'm hoping to revive that, allow them to perhaps get some funding to basically reboot that 1990s document with new science and new information. So that may go out for public comment as early as July, that resolution, and it'll go to the board in the month of summer. So I'll be circling back with the board members and all the other regions as I'm making GRAP statewide, input and thoughts about that. So that's kind of where GRAP is. The next one I'm up to date is on George Air Force Base. That's item number four. Kimberly mentioned the one from Mojave tour. I had the pleasure of going on a second time with Kimberly and Felicia. Marcus attended along with friends Spidey Weber and Gordon Burns from Calipia. It was always an excellent tour. We did compress it from 2 days into one. But I think in talking to the board members and we got great feedback on that. I think they very much enjoyed that tour. They learned a lot. From both the participants and the Mojave Water Agency. And so I think they're carrying back that good information to the state board as they start making decisions about the drought, stormwater, other policy areas. It was really good timing to have them at that time when they're thinking about all these new policies.
I think I could add to that. Also, Joni Nunes on the tour with Eric Eckdahl, who is with the groundwater unit. And I think a lot of what Mojave has done is very easily repeatable in the groundwater service areas that they're looking to set up as Miami-era groundwater regulation. And I think there's no need to reinvent the wheel. We have an excellent template for that already. And as you saw, the data repository that's provided with Mojave is something that I think we'll see replicated as well as the locally applicable analyses. So I think having him as part of that tour really helped provide some input at the state level. Thank you.
I touched on George Air Force Base because it's in your packet. And as part of this tour, even though it wasn't part of the tour, by us virtually physically driving around George Air Base, I was able to update the state board, the mission board, on where we were in terms of the cleanup on both the solvent, petroleum fluid, and RDL drain fluid. And I updated on that. We're going to be working more actively with the military to try to expedite some of the cleanup to work with them to deal with the DL drain fluid and other things. And so it was a great opportunity to talk to them about that. And so they are aware of what we're doing in the region. And that brings up kind of interesting thing that we talked about on the tour about, the signal capacity. If you have an area that is polluted, it is in the best interest of a region to speed up claims in vital areas because other areas. And we had some interesting dialogue about public policy issues. So this was a good session. So I'm going to now toggle to some updates that I think you would like to know about. I'm going to just follow up on Kimberly's kind comments on the workshop that we had in Barstow for the clinic and abatement order for Jeanine Hinckley. And again, I do think the process went well. We had a lot of good participation from the community through the basement. They had the new jobs, other things to participate. We really had active participation by everyone. And it was, for me, it was, I think, very inspirational because every person who came, I thought, put their personal things aside and really, in a very collaborative way, shared information. And then all sides learned from each other. It was a very intimate setting, and we took the time to listen to each other. And so it was, I think, a very successful effort, and I think a lot of kind words from people after the fact saying that they really felt like it made a difference, and people listening to each other. And so some felt that was sort of the turning point for the community, mainly that, you know, that by striking down barriers and talking to each other, they could work together. And so there's also a separate effort about the future of Kingwood that's been going on that Pete and I have been involved in. And I think that's getting some steam under it where they're talking about doing a charter. And this is just the community, rebuilding the agricultural community, rebuilding the school, rebuilding some of the community spirit, which was very heartening to see, too.
So about how many people came to the workshop?
Would you guess 40-ish?
Yeah, 47, I think, was my head count. Yeah, 47, including staff and board.
Yeah. So it was well attended. We will be posting on the web, and Sue's been helping us on that. Is, everyone gave different comments, and we typed them up, and it will be on the web, as well as the advisory team just kind of call us themes. They heard some different tables of different themes, and that's also up. I'm going to move on to some updates of what's going on at the State Board and give you a little bit on the graph and what's going on with that. Let me update you on a few more that you might find interesting. And that is on composting. In our region, we have two compost facilities that the Governor and Power Cycle are quite ramping up the use of organics out of landfills, which you will likely see an increase in composting and mulching facilities across the state, potentially some coming to our region. I think we want to raise the approaches for looking at the possibilities. The State Board is going to hold a workshop next week, which I will be attending with, I hope, Brianna St. Pierre from our Victorville office. We're going to have an expert panel of regional boards to kind of give input on the State Board. I think that's actually kind of a good trend to have the regional boards be there at the State Board meeting and providing expert advice on what they actually see, boots on the ground in the region. Some of the regions have 30-plus compost facilities, like Region 3. So it's an important thing. So what this is a statewide general order to streamline and make more efficient, similar like the recycled water policy, the general order. This will make for the compost and things easier, and for Power Cycle and for our regional boards as well, we have multiple compost facilities. This general order, as proposed, would have one of the facilities, nursery fires potentially qualify, and a second one, American Organics, did not qualify because of existing groundwater pollution and its location next to the river would not qualify for this proposed order. We didn't get everything we wanted, but we've got a lot of things that we did want. We wish we could have had third-party liability and financial assurances funding, but that will not be in the general order. Some of the other industry and some of Power Cycle believe that the State Board's general order is too stringent, that the requirements are too tight, that may hamper compost facilities. We believe that there might be illegal dumping of green waste on ag lands. So that's part of the reason the regional boards are there to speak this, because that's actually not what we're seeing. We don't see this as a great burden to the industry. And we're seeing huge water quality impacts if we don't have this, particularly in Region 5 and Region 3. And we're not seeing illegal dumping in any of the regions. So we'll see what the board does. On the 16th, we'll have a workshop, and then in July, potentially, we'll adopt this general order. So that's what's going on in the compost order. And Brianna and all the trustees are very difficult in this, and so really appreciate your participation in the statewide policy. And Patrice, you can help me too, so. Two other things that you might find interesting is you heard this discussion from Mojave about stormwater. Senator Cavill passed a law asking the state board to develop protocols for stormwater management plans of public agencies across the state looking for caring. And it's going to be, it's going to be hooked to the financial funding. So for a local entity to get funding, they're going to have completed such a plan. And the state was still has yet to write the protocols. It covers the soup and nuts from stormwater, from traditional stormwater to it as a resource, dry wells, all these things you've heard discussion of. I recently volunteered with Bob Larson from our Tahoe office, and he our representative to the statewide committee. So we'll be working with other Tahoe offices, also in the northern areas. It's kind of a new way of looking at stormwater, as you've heard, as a resource, and not just a pollution problem, but one has to be thoughtful about coming forward, as you heard, for the adjudication, or not introducing pollutants into groundwater aquifers. So it'll be, it's kind of an exciting thing. It is in statute to do these protocols next summer, but the state board has accelerated that deadline to being done by this December. So by this summer, you may start seeing drafts of these protocols out in the street for comment. And that's because there's such a pressure of trying to push the money out the door to get projects going that the state board is going to dramatically accelerate those protocols. That's both exciting and scary for us, especially Mr. Larson, who's like, we're all going to have to be running as fast as we can. The other statewide policy, and you heard Mike talk about this, is the anti-degradation policy review. There was a series of workshops in June, and Mike is going to be attending some of those, and Mike was very active and integral in that group in terms of providing counseling and advice. As you heard, so I'm again as grateful he has, he's participating. I'm trying to get all of our staff to get more involved in statewide efforts to offer their expertise and knowledge to these efforts. As you heard Mike say, they're going to need to move away from actually amending anti-degradation policy, keeping that for, this is the trend at the moment. We're going to have work groups, and that may ebb and flow and change, but at the moment the thinking is to not change the anti-deg policy, keep that for surface waters, and instead do a groundwater policy and probably separate that into high-quality groundwater aquifers, you might treat them a little bit differently. For all these aspects you might touch on, that's the water capacity, anti-deg analysis, things like that, from polluted aquifers, because they are different, you know, having intervals. In the Central Valley, for example, they have almost all polluted aquifers, so there isn't a certain capacity for them in that area. So that's going on. Also, there's a lot of things going on at the state board this summer. Those are three big ones that affect us, including graphs. So that's what the state board's doing. One thing I want to also point out too is OEA has climate indicators on the heels of all of our climate workshops. Years ago, OEA got given the ability to do climate indicators that they're going to help the airborne in terms of measuring. How can you measure change from climate change? OEA has very little money to do this, and they've been trying to slowly make that a little bit more robust. In the last budget season, they got a little bit more money, and they got some more to make that a little bit more robust. So they're revisiting that. Our own Tom Sook was very involved in that, and Dave Burks was SNARL to use in-stream biota for biological objectives as an indicator to see, are our streams healthy? So big thanks to the work of our own Tom Sook. That's now into the OEA indicators, and that does benefit our regional objectives, it's a whole state. So I just want to let you know. And some of the things you never see our staff behind the scenes working with our sister agencies on projects, and this is one where I think they were very successful. I'm happy to report some new positions in our offices I wanted to share with you. You heard a little bit about this recently, too. We have two employees that are in the Tahoe office. William Chen, who's a scientific aide, who's going to help Scott's division over there. He's an engineering student attending West Tahoe Community College. We also have Jessica Baldridge, who's going to be volunteering in our Tahoe office. She's an environmental engineering student at the University of Nevada, and I'm not sure if we're going to have her help us with all of the dredge and fill permits. We have quite a, the silver lining for the drought, or the, I don't know what you want to call this, everyone is wanting to dredge because it's cheaper and easier, even when the waters are low, to do projects in the dry. So we're having a quite a run on those and quite a lot of increased staff for that area. We're also actively recruiting two positions. A scientific aide for the TMU, Health Richard, over there, and a two-year low-term geologist in our timber unit to help out Doug Cushman's unit on non-important source pollution. I think you've mentioned about from Lori in terms of the timber fee, where previously we asked for funding, we didn't get it, but it's in this year's budget, so hooray. We finally do that, and that will be inspired about the management's individuals, and we have get to hire is going to be busy. For our Victorville office, we have three vacancies announced this month. One is for an engineering geologist for Patrice's unit to replace Tom Brown. Thomas Brown is going to be shifting over to Jay's unit and to work on the stormwater and wastewater and recycled projects because of the increased effort in that area. Here we were facing Mary Del Valle, who was recently retired from our agency. And we also just got the grant to recruit two permanent environmental geologist slots to replace the two limited term slots in the DOD unit. So we're not getting any new people, but they're converting from limited term to permanent slots. And the hard part with limited term is that, you know, if you're in that slot and it's 2 years, by year one, you're thinking, well, I should look for another spot because my job may end. And that's a statewide problem. So the government this year's budget is talking about a different way of dealing with limited terms for all state agencies. Mm-hmm. They'll be part of budget negotiations. So when that's done, we're hoping to get a more, I guess, streamlined and effective way to deal with when we need resources for a short amount of time to make it workable so that you don't lose these people. Because it's not sustainable for any agency to train someone for a year and have to look for another job when you need to. It's just not a practical way of managing. We don't have any other positions in this year's budget, but I'm thankful for that we're going to get out of this year's budget. Last year, you recall, we got one for our 401 search program, which is helping with this flood of dredging and construction projects. And this year, we got the timber, so we're grateful for both of those. That concludes my year for it. I'm going to have more time to give you a summary of what's been going on in the world of enforcement.
I just had one comment, and I wanted the board to know that in connection with the Round Fire, that I noticed and I got a lot of feedback from the community about how much people in Mono County, particularly the Mono County officials, really appreciated the energy and the sense of urgency and the sensitivity that the staff brought to their role in helping the county figure out how to deal with the fire, and were able to give them some guidance, and they were very, very much appreciated. And that's another one of those things that we don't see, unless, God forbid, it happens to be in your community, but you should know that they just did an excellent, excellent job.
Thank you.
Lori Hemperkin, talk about Portland Evaluation Report, which is in behind the pink sheet, the memo. I'm going to be brief. This is the violation report for the first quarter 2015, so that's January through March, and I would say the vast majority of the violations in the spreadsheets are related to self-reported violations and self-monitoring reports. We don't do a lot of field work or inspections between January and March, but we did a few. In fact, I noticed that one of the violations was at Snow Valley ski area because there was no snow. We could go out and look at it. Normally it doesn't happen in that first quarter, but we have no priority one violations, serious violations, to prove the and a similar number to the last quarter of 2014. Mostly I wanted to just let you know that I know our table of pending enforcement actions, it's been looking like the same table for a while, and I apologize for that. It's just we've been trying to get some of these MMPs out on the street. I've been told by Scott, and now that he has his new senior in charge of enforcement, Kathy Poole, she's making a lot of progress on getting some of these out the door. So you won't likely see some of these. But these are minimum mandatory penalties that Patty can actually sign off on, and as long as everybody agrees. And I think we're at the point right now where most of the discharges kind of understand the rules of the game under minimum mandatory penalties. So we do expect to see those go out in the next, hopefully in the next month, maybe even next week. But for the Susanville CSD, therefore, it's much older violations that occurred, and also at a couple of the hatcheries. And so we actually spoke to Terry Jackson last night, but he's aware of these as well. There may be some new ones that he hasn't heard about, but they're similar, where there will be some minimum mandatory penalties. And the ones at the hatchery, most of them actually are not related to natural causes. That was the past ones that you saw that Fish and Wildlife protested against because of its background water quality. These minimum mandatory penalties are more associated with some operational issues that they have since corrected or, you know, some kind of handle on, whether it was testing for manganate or sediment. At Hot Creek, they did a big maintenance effort last year to try to remedy those issues in terms of suspended solids. So those will be hit the street. And then we're trying to get on the dairies, the B&E dairies, the cleanup and abatement order for replacement water has been pending. We may be having a future meeting with all the parties that Patty would oversee. We have a draft cleanup order out. We've had comments and input provided. There's still some confusion just because the area downgrading of the B&E dairy is a neighborhood that has Golden State Water and private wells, and it's an interesting mix, and it's been difficult to try to ascertain who's drinking what and where the high nitrate. So we may sit down and try to actually work through some of the facts and the circumstances of what we really want from the dairy. And you heard the Levine thing last night, so you're going to hear that again in July. And then I wanted to just briefly let you know about a couple things that are in the works that are on your table. I mentioned it, I think, last month, and I did sign this week, or I signed it the week before, but the responsible party signed an agreement. So the South Lake Tahoe Laundry Works, which is an old laundromat that had self-operated dry cleaning machines. It was PCE discharged probably in the 60s, half a South Y. And last summer, we saw an increase in PCE in a couple of private residential wells that are on Eloise Street. And we sat down with the parties, and I signed basically a settlement agreement or a contractual agreement for the parties to provide replacement water to the two residential well owners. Well, they'd already been providing bottled water since we found the violation last fall. And in the meantime, the landowners of the two properties, it's actually Stanford Camp. So Stanford Camp has a summer camp at Fall Leaf Lake that they own these two parcels that are old houses. One of them they use as an office, one they house summer employees. And they were both served by private drinking water wells that were probably put in the 40s or 50s. And they have decided to hook up to Lucan's, and they're very close to where South Talk BB connects as well, and to the system there. So these two responsible parties that are the owners of the shopping center, the South Lake, are going to reimburse Stanford Camp for the connection to the community water. So that's what I signed an agreement for. There was also some increase in PCE at the site, at the South Y, that we were going to issue a cleanup order to deal with the remediation. There is ongoing remediation right now at the site. So that will probably go out for comment the next month, and it may be contested. Part of it may be contested just because there's a couple of responsible parties, previous landowners versus the current landowners, and the original, of course, Laundry Works owner aren't around, so these are just two big, more like developer, landowner-type folks. So we will put it out for comment and hopefully resolve the issue before Patty has to make a decision on that, but that's going to be coming out. And then the Tahoe Queen, the paddle wheeler on Lake Tahoe, had a hydraulic oil spill, I think last, wasn't in this court. Actually, yeah, I'm not sure what the date of the spill was, but we think that it was I think it was in March, it was right after this first quarter ended, or it might have been early April. And so there, we were looking at drafting an ACL because the hydraulic fluid was spilled due to some communication errors where someone had been working on the engine and had capped off the hydraulic fluid lines with this plastic and duct tape. And they didn't tell the guy who every day is required to fire up all the engines to test the... And the boat was grounded at the time, and so it still happened because of that lack of communication and standardized protocols. So we're actually going to be asking Patty to sign an investigative order next week that just requests additional information about who did what when and what are the protocols and their spill prevention, and depending on what we learn, we may or may not impose a penalty, but at least... In this investigative order, I think we're hoping to improve their protocols and their communication as well. So that's all I have.